Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Brad Stewart hit me, and I don't feel so good, dude. I don't feel so good. It's all fuzzy.
One of the controversies of this week, but all in all, it's been a pretty damn good week for the San Jose Sharks, wouldn't you say?
How can you complain about a 6-0 start?
Right.
It's hard to find
the best start in franchise history.
Anything to be super critical of. I mean, there are certainly some elements that I think we'll talk about today. There's been some player movement that we'll talk about today, but I think every Sharks fan has to be happy, and I would take exception with anyone who said that they expected this.
Right.
Because how could any of us expect this? Yeah,
you can't expect. Of course the Sharks are going to come out to their best start in franchise history. That's just a foregone conclusion.
Because of, you know, so many key guys not playing during the lockout.
Especially on D, right?
And then those are the guys that are having the best start. I mean, Thornton, aside from Thornton, you know, Marlowe, Boyle, except for when he had the flu. I mean, Boyle's looked great so far.
Yeah, he's looked really good.
Vlasic looks good. Brad Stewart looks good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things are humming right now in Sharksland with a game tonight against the Oilers on the horizon. I guess last podcast we had talked about two games. So, you know, we've got the home opener to touch on here against Phoenix, and then the three other home games after that.
Right. Right. So, do we want to deal with them one by one, or do we want to deal with them as a group? Or?
I guess as a group, dude. I mean,
so what were your impressions? I was unable to go to the first two home games, which I was really upset about, but, you know, I had made travel plans months ago and I had no idea when the season was coming back. So this is what you get. I was there for the Vancouver win, which was really nice to see the Sharks score early, get off to a lead, and then, you know, win by three. That was a great thing to see.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing for me about the Vancouver game was from the moment the game started or even before, Ryan Clough was not going to stand for any sort of, although Couture started it. Couture touched Burrows.
But Burrows hit him in the face with his helmet. Burrows leaned into the faceoff dot and he hit Couture in the face with the top of his helmet. And so that's why Couture lifted his chin.
Right.
To get him from, Burrows.
Okay. Well, Burrows started it, but Couture made the first hand contact. Anyways.
The obvious contact.
I love that Clough goes over and basically commands Couture to get out of the dot,
right?
You know, and he's going to take the face off, which would never have happened because it would have just been a fight anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love Desjardins answering the bell in that game. Who else fought? Dougie Murray fought in that game.
Yeah, fought Aaron Volpatti after Volpatti hit Hanzus in the back or something.
Every time Vancouver tried to start something, which they're notorious for,
right?
The Sharks answer the bell, which is not something that they did last year. They didn't do that as a team.
Did you see on Puck Daddy how Yannick Hansen came in and cross-checked the ref in the back to get him out of the way?
I did see that.
That was shocking to me. I couldn't believe it. Of course, you know, I was there. You look at Clough and Burrows and Couture. That's what your eyes are focused on. But I'm really, actually, honestly astounded that the NHL didn't review that play or you know, see that video and say, this is unacceptable. I suppose the ref didn't call anything at the time, which is, again, something I find unbelievable.
That's a weird situation. I don't know. I don't know what else could there be to it that we don't know. But
I mean, in all sports today, you touch the ref with any intent, even if it's not malicious intent. You end up usually sitting on the bench for a couple games. And this is Yannick Hansen specifically pushed the ref out of the way in order to join the fray. That is amazing to me. That was just one little tweak that I didn't find out until a day or two later that was sort of the weird situation surrounding that whole incident, which was weird enough as it is. And then Ryan Clough turns into a 4-year-old and then, you know, it was...
It didn't even bother me, actually. I mean, that's a lot of penalties and the Sharks were perfect in that game, actually, on the kill, right?
They were.
So that's not good. You don't want to give Vancouver that many opportunities, but You know, I don't mind when a guy goes nuclear every now and then.
Yeah.
Just to put in the Canucks' mind that this isn't going to happen. You know, that with this collection of guys, they're not going to stand for any sort of bullying, dude. You know,
that's
this team got bullied last year. They did. And it looks like they're not going to put up with it.
Yes, I do like that part. And certainly we saw some incidents. Maybe we should talk about the Stewart hit at this point. I know we got a request on Twitter to talk about that hit. And you know, that was in the Colorado game, which was, which day was that? Thursday?
Saturday.
No, that was Saturday. Where Gabriel Landeskog, who was the reigning rookie of the year, was coming through the neutral zone, had his head down, reaching out for the puck. Brad Stewart steps up, drills him. He goes down like a sack of bricks, leaves the game quickly, but comes back, plays the rest of the game. And then who went after Stewart? I don't even remember. Ryan O'Byrne or somebody. And you know, Stewart fought him, and you see that kind of stuff happen. Guys hit a star player hard, and then there has to be a fight, which is one of those things, one of the few things about hockey that I kind of don't like. I just think that's kind of weak. But I don't think you retaliate or get back at him by having a sort of a lower skilled player go after the guy that hit him. You know, I think maybe, okay, if that's how this is going to be, then I'm going to try and hit Patrick Marleau, or I'm going to try and hit Joe Thornton. Of course, you want to hit him clean and everything, but the whole fighting thing doesn't make sense. But there was certainly some controversy surrounding the fact that Brad Stewart was not suspended for the hit, was not penalized for the hit. And I don't know, dude, what do you think about that decision either at the moment or the decision after the fact?
In the moment, I didn't think it was a dirty hit. Right? In the moment. Mm-hmm. I texted you and said, you got to go look at this hit. I mean, Brad Stewart just completely blew up Landeskog.
Right.
And I was fired up about it. And, you know, I felt the same way about the Joe Thornton Perron hit. Like, I feel like there's a bit of a gray area, you know, with some of these.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's unfortunate. And sad that Landeskog is apparently having some concussion-like symptoms.
Right.
And certainly don't wish poor health on him. You know, he's a rising young star in the NHL.
Or David Perron or anybody else.
No, absolutely not. You know, you don't want to see guys get hurt except for maybe Patrick Kane. But
Alex Burrows, I mean, not wishing injury upon him.
No, not even those guys.
Yeah.
So that part of it bums me out.
Yeah.
But if there was no injury here, we wouldn't even be talking about it anymore.
True.
Like, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Although, even after the game, Dater as...
Of course Dater did, but then the Sharks guys, none of them said it was dirty on the broadcast. They were like, clean hit.
Yeah.
Clean hit, you know? So, you're getting a biased opinion, right?
On both sides, of course, because I think Joe Sacco had a lot of things to say about
so
the hit.
So, what did some of the neutral party NHL people have to say about it, other than the fact that Shanahan ignored it, which I think is the most important thing.
Right. I think there's sort of two ways to look at it. One is you look at it in the context of other things going on in the NHL and sort of the history of those kinds of incidents. Specifically, I'm thinking of the only other suspension this year, which was Braden Schenn's hit on Volchenkov. And if you look at that hit, Brad Stewart's hit is nowhere near as bad, and Braden Schenn only got one game. So if you say, okay, well, this isn't nearly as bad, then that means Brad Stewart shouldn't get anything. He didn't jump into him. He didn't leave his feet. He didn't do all this kind of stuff. He didn't charge him. You know, Shanahan said all those things about the Schenn hit. So from that perspective, yeah, it's absolutely the right call. From what it seems like the league is trying to do, Brad Stewart probably should have been suspended for that hit. He hit him in the head. Landeskog put himself in a vulnerable position. I understand that argument, and it's true. You know, I might go, if I was to dictate league policy, I might say all hits to the head are penalized. Therefore, it sort of takes all the gray area out. If you're in a position where you're going to hit somebody and you think you might hit him in the head, then you have to alter the trajectory of your shoulder or your skating or whatever so you don't hit him in the head.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. I think that, you know, we're seeing this also in a different way with some of the calls interference with the goaltender, which has been overcalled so far in some really bad ways, both for and against the Sharks, you know, where you see contact happening in the crease that is used to be just normal in terms of trying to bury the puck that now is considered interference. But I can imagine in the moment for someone like Brad Stewart trying to make a play like that, that it'd be very, very difficult to adjust. And it could take the physicality out of the game completely if you start suspending hits like this. But I could also find a hard time disagreeing with someone who felt like it was a dirty hit. I mean, I don't have a real strong take on it, dude. Like, what I do have a strong take on is that I am super impressed with Brad Stewart.
Yeah.
And I think that we and most Sharks fans undervalued how effective a player he is still.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, he's good. He's a good hockey player, and his presence on this team is so valuable right now.
Especially since Burns is out and Demers is out, although it looks like Demers may be in the lineup tonight. Not quite sure exactly who's going to be scratched, and we'll talk about maybe sort of the last defensive pairing in a second, but absolutely, we need Brad Stewart in the lineup. And if we didn't have him and we had what we had last year without Brent Burns, the Sharks would be a completely different hockey team.
Yeah, it's another physical defenseman, so you're not just relying on Douglas Murray, and he's a good penalty killer, and he can throw in some offensive spice along the way.
Yeah.
He's a good player, and I guess I just sort of thought that since Detroit let him walk, although he didn't want to stay, he wanted to be home, but that he maybe just didn't have much left anymore, that we were going to see a declining Brad Stewart, and I don't feel like we've seen that at all.
Yeah, we were wrong. Wrong.
So. It's good to be wrong on this, and I'm going to admit that, you know, based on the first six games, I'm wrong about Michael Hanzu so far, too. I mean, he's blocking a lot of shots.
Yeah.
He's playing good defensive hockey, and he won the game against the Ducks. He won that game in the shootout, dude.
I was so disappointed when I saw him shooting first in the shootout.
Yeah, and he's the only one who scored.
And then I said to my friend Scott, who I was sitting with at the game, I said, a buck says he makes this shot. And of course he made it. And he's like, and my friend Scott was smart. He's like, no bet. And of course he scores.
Yeah, of course he does.
His shootout record is like,
he's
amazing.
Like almost 50%.
He's almost 50%, which is astounding, which is very, very good.
So
who would have thought Michael, if you had to pick everybody on the Sharks to be 50% in the shootout, Michael Hanzus wouldn't be on the tip of your tongue.
He's playing very well defensively, and that's what you want to see from him.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Gomez, while not perfect, has created some kind of electric chances.
Yeah.
He's been very good in the faceoff dot, and it's been a pretty decent addition. Now, I don't know where he really fits in completely yet, and I think they're still trying to figure it out, but are you happy with Scott Gomez?
I'm pretty happy with Scott Gomez, and the thing about Scott Gomez that's interesting is I can understand if he was in, you know, the way he's playing now, playing for the Sharks, you know, he's all over the ice, he's got a lot of good jump, he's got extremely good vision on the ice, and he can thread these passes through. The one thing I've noticed from Scott Gomez several times through the games he's played is that he seems to lose his grip on the puck fairly often, like more than you would sort of expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly you never see like Joe just sort of like skating with it or turning with the puck, and then all of a sudden it's off a stick and in the hands of the opposition. And that seems to happen to Scott Gomez a little bit. So from, I can, like in Montreal, if you're paying the guy $7 million and he's on the second line and he's doing that, that must be the most infuriating thing ever.
Right.
On a third line role, it's a little bit frustrating, but it's not something that it's going to sour me on Scott Gomez. I mean, he's providing a lot more sort of offensive punch and vision and puck poise than you would see from Michael Hanzus, for instance. I mean, you know, it was Scott Gomez that led a nice little crisscross pattern and, you know, dished the puck to Couture, made a nice perfect drop pass to Couture, who buried the puck and gave the Sharks a tie game late in the Ducks game. So his first point, and you know, frankly, overdue. I thought Couture had set up quite a few people already. She probably should have gotten a point long before. So I'm pretty happy with Scott Gomez so far. If he goes long, like playing exactly this way, I'd say he's easily worth, you know, that's easily worth the $700,000 that the Sharks are paying him.
There's been so many pleasant surprises. Niemi included. I mean, it's one of the hottest goalies in the league.
933 save percentage, I think.
Is there anyone so far that you're disappointed in?
Let's see. And just Douglas Murray, I think. Douglas Murray looks just as slow this year, if not slower, than he did last year. And I think that I thought I read that he had some sort of injury last year or something like that. And I was hoping that maybe, you know, he was never fleet of foot, right? But I was hoping that he would be a little bit, better in terms of the first couple of strides. And it seems like there's a lot of times where he seems very vulnerable to people going around him. And we're probably going to see that tonight against the Oilers especially. I definitely noticed it a week ago against the Oilers. And we might very well see it again tonight if he's in the lineup. I know reading Kevin Kurz's blog, you know, it seems like Petrecki probably won't be in the lineup tonight. And so, you know, with Demers and Boyle's going to be in, so that means one more defenseman might be out, and it could be Douglas Murray. So I don't know, dude. I guess.
Wow. You think that they would scratch Douglas Murray to bring in Demers and leave Matt Irwin in? This is no indictment against Matt Irwin.
No.
One of the topics that I mean, he's in the top 30 in the NHL in block shots. I mean, the kid's been
really good.
Pretty effective.
Yeah.
You know, not maybe not showing all of the offensive upside that he's shown in the AHL.
Right.
But pretty steady, reliable, you know. So I certainly don't feel uncomfortable knowing that he's out there.
No.
You know, a different feel than like when we had like someone like Joe Callahan out there.
Yeah.
So or even Mike Moore, mm-hmm. you know, who you're just like, oh God, please, no, just get off the ice.
Right.
You know, don't feel that way about Irwin. But
that's sort of how I felt about Petrecki, to be honest with you.
he was pretty shaky to start. I felt like he settled down, but he certainly wasn't impressive.
Yeah. There was one time I remember where he was holding the puck behind the net. And usually when you do that, you see the forwards come back and they sort of do the curl pattern and they sort of break out. And he stood there with the puck and the forwards all went out into the neutral zone. And then they all had to come back again to do the same thing again before Petrecki finally decided to do something with it. And he just like rimmed it around really hard out of the zone. That was what he was waiting for, I guess. So,
well, Douglas Murray is last in the Sharks defenseman in ice time, right? He's
okay.
Averaging the least amount of ice time. So if Demers is in fact healthy, and I think that we can infer that it's possible he might play. The Sharks did clear a roster spot today by waiving Fraser McLaren, who was picked up in the infinite wisdom of Dave Nonis in Toronto. I know there's people who've been fans of Fraser McLaren, us included. You know, I think that there's been sides of his game that we enjoy, but he's no longer a San Jose Shark.
Right.
But that did open the door for Demers. We'll talk about McLaren maybe more in a minute. But if he plays tonight, you're saying it should be Murray, or you think it will be Murray?
I think it should be Murray. I doubt it will be Murray. That's how I feel about that.
So it would be Matt Irwin?
Yeah, if I had to guess.
It'll be interesting to see what they do. Maybe even in a game against Edmonton, this might be the game to sit Murray.
That's right.
You know,
if you're going to play the matchup, I think, you know, Edmonton's a pretty fast team, a lot of young forwards that are quick. That would be the right time.
We saw, especially with Dan Boyle coming off the flu, if he's playing tonight, anyone who said Dan Boyle should be bought out or, you know, sent away, you know, looked the fool when he did not play against the Ducks.
Yeah.
The Sharks really struggle to gain the zone sometimes. Boy, did we miss Dan Boyle. I mean, this guy, even though he's 36, 37, is so important to the success of this team. And no Brent Burns. I mean, there was nobody to kind of lead that rush effectively.
It's true. And Dan Boyle manages to create space and opportunity for himself with these fakey moves that he does all the time. And it seems like, you know, the Ducks forecheck like crazy. I mean, I think, you know, Bruce Boudreaux gave everybody, you know, amphetamines before the game. Everybody was...
Well, could be a deer antler spray.
It could be deer antler. Yeah, maybe they all got deer antler spray before the game.
How does that work? Do you just spray it like Old Spice?
I think so.
You get strong?
Yeah, you're just on the inside.
That's so weird.
Inside of your wrist.
Who would think that that's a good idea? Like, you're sitting around and
apparently
you're like...
Apparently Vijay Singh.
But you're like at home, you're like, should I snort some Clorox to give myself some extra power?
Or
deer
antler spray.
I've got it. Here, honey, I'm going to take off my clothes, spray me down with this deer antler spray, and let's see if I can run just a little bit faster.
Yeah.
Who comes up with that idea, dude?
I don't know.
Maybe I'll shove that remote up my ass. It'll make me a better podcaster. I mean, I'm going to try it. It's weird.
It's very odd.
Anyway, sorry.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about the Ducks forecheck.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, they were all over it. And Dan Boyle has a really, you know, excellent way of escaping by faking one way and going another and sort of shaking one of these guys. And it seemed like the Sharks D could not do that. So there was a lot of giveaways in our zone. There was a lot of a Sharks defenseman would have the puck. The forechecker would come in. The forechecker would sort of pin him against the boards. And then sort of a scrum would ensue. And then the puck would come to another one of the Sharks defensemen. Then another forechecker would come in, pin him to the boards, repeat.
Right.
And I couldn't help thinking several times during the game that if one of those times was Dan Boyle, we would have seen, you know, a better breakout play, a better escape play.
Or even Brent Burns. Yeah. Or even Jason Demers. I mean, Demers brings that element to the game, and that's why if he is healthy, he definitely should play tonight, because if Boyle's not able to do his regular 22 minutes, mm-hmm. you're going to need Demers to bring that element to the game.
Yeah.
So with the Sharks kind of escaping narrowly by the skin of their teeth in two of these games, the Ducks and the Coyotes, would you say is that a good sign? Like, you know, you say good teams win games that they shouldn't, you know, or is that just dumb luck in your eyes?
It's a little bit of both. I think that, you know, a game against the Ducks, the Sharks have lost, what, they lose 5 of 6 against the Ducks last year.
It wasn't good last year.
In the regular season. You know, they got crushed by the Ducks. I mean, this is a team that's really had their number. And, you know, certainly in the latter half of the season, it was Bruce Boudreau behind the bench. You know, clearly he had a game plan for the Sharks, and it almost
scheming
worked.
Scheming against his old roommate.
That's right. And it almost worked. And the fact that the Sharks got out of it, I thought it did show a little bit of, you know, fortitude on their part. They didn't wilt. They did try it. You know, it was a close game the whole way, even though they were getting really dominated. In other situations, they might have been down by 3 or more. And I didn't see, you know, the Phoenix game live, but, you know... But, of course, there's some element of luck there. There's a little bit of element, but, you know, it's better to be lucky than good, especially in a short season.
I felt like in the Phoenix game, it was going all Phoenix's way. And then the last 10 minutes, the boys just decided that this wasn't going to happen again. And they just, once they powered through Phoenix, which was playing in a back-to-back game,
right.
Phoenix just, they crumbled. They crumbled. That is not a good team right now, the Phoenix Coyotes. And, you know, the Sharks off to such a good start. You look at the state of the Pacific Division with L.A. reeling, the Ducks being the Ducks, the Stars. You know, where's our Dallas Stars fan who emailed us after game one? I don't think we're hearing from him again. They're not doing well. Boy, you know, there is an opportunity here.
Right.
You know,
I mean, the Ducks are in second place in the Pacific right now.
Right. Opportunity for the Sharks to win the Pacific. To play solid hockey the rest of the way. They've got a pretty big jump already on everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way things are going, the favorable homestand still, you know, with Edmonton and Nashville tonight, and their first really hard game comes next Tuesday against Chicago.
That's going to be the game.
And that's the benchmark, you know, where you go, okay, Chicago finally lost last night to Minnesota. You know, that's the game that I think I'm looking forward to the most, no matter what happens tonight or Saturday, or even when they go to the Ducks on Monday. You know, what happens that night against another team that we know is good, we know the Sharks struggle with.
Right.
What will happen then? You know, that I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be some, the tests are going to come quicker. It seems like there's 2 games a week. You know,
Yeah.
This week it's a go. You know, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, next Tuesday.
So the Sharks made 2 roster moves. Dude, they traded Brandon Mashinter, which we didn't talk about.
Right.
You know, then they get some minor league forward named Tommy Grant, who I don't think we'll ever see in San Jose.
Right.
And then today, in order to make this roster space, they have to waive Fraser McLaren, which is, I think, not a surprise.
I'm sure with every intention of him playing in Worcester.
Yeah, I think so. You know, maybe slightly surprising that it wasn't Nick Petrecki, because I think Petrecki can be sent down without having to go through that process, right?
That's true.
So they are keeping Petrecki around, unless they sent him down too. I didn't see any word of that.
I didn't see that.
But McLaren claimed by Toronto, your feeling on this when I texted you was, you said, balls or something like that. I can't remember.
Bummer,
yeah. Right? Why bummer? It seems like everybody else is saying, who cares?
Well, bummer maybe for the Worcester Sharks. The Worcester Sharks might have could use him. I don't think, and haven't thought for a while, that Fraser McLaren had a future in the NHL. He just doesn't seem to quite have the skills. And if you want somebody as strictly a fighter type, that's not who the Sharks seem to be interested in, you know, like many other teams in the league. Not really interested in holding
Toronto
a roster.
Is. Yeah, clearly.
Toronto clearly is. And so, you know, the Sharks didn't really have much to do with him. So it's a little unfortunate. You know, maybe the Worcester Sharks could have used him and his skill set would fit better in an AHL role.
Yeah, it seems like his tenure had sort of run its course. They'd given him his opportunities. He didn't live up to their expectations. I don't really love that the Sharks have lost two guys who are able to drop the gloves and provide a little toughness in the last week. Like, I don't think that's good news for a team that, or an or organization that is kind of lacking toughness, that you lose two guys, depth guys, who can provide that. Now, Worcester has converted Matt Pelech into a forward, Jim Vandermeer style. That's happened ever since he got sent down. And I think there's no coincidence that, you know, I think Doug Wilson knew this was coming.
Right.
And that McLaren might be claimed. And now they have, I don't know, it's Pelech. I think it's Pelech.
Yeah.
Now he's playing wing. So if something happens or we need a little muscle,
I guess. And here, he played with the Calgary organization. He played for Calgary in the NHL, right?
He did. Yeah. Very briefly, I think. Mm-hmm. So that might be the guy who ends up getting brought up, you know, in a plug and play kind of situation. If you needed somebody to kind of be a tough guy, it seems like Kurt Gogol, the other tough guy down there, doesn't seem to have much of an NHL future. He wasn't even brought to camp, you know, this time around.
Right.
So undrafted guy. So, not a huge move, but, you know, something that affects the Sharks' depth. What other Sharks news do we have, dude?
Well, we have ownership changes, right? So I don't know if it's really going to affect us at all, but, you know, there was an announcement that sort of the two owners, Stranton Sklavos and Kevin Compton, who are sort of the face of the Sharks ownership group, were actually getting bought out by the new big owner. His name is, what's his name? Hasso something? I lost it. I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry. I've been derelict in my duties.
I got it, dude.
Hasso.
I got it.
Dude.
His name is
Hasso.
Hassan Pfeffer Incorporated.
Hassan Pfeffer. Shmuel Schlamazel. Hasso Pfeffer.
Hasso Plattner.
Hasso Plattner.
Hasso Plattner.
Okay.
Now we have a little birdie.
Well, yeah, we had a source give us some extra information. I guess he had we know a person that works in the Sharks organization, and you know, they had a meeting with the people, and he says, you know, not much is going to change. And I wouldn't say there was anything particularly revelatory with those kinds of things, but it's always nice to get some internal information about that kind of stuff. So,
and they seem to be impressed by this guy. Our source did, and they seem to be impressed by the things that he said in terms of, you know, how the organization was going to move forward, and, you know, his goals are the same as everyone, as they were before, to win the cup and to be a, I think he called it, a sustainable organization in terms of, you know, giving back to the community and also, you know, putting back the money that they make into the team. So I appreciated that. On a side note, you know, we're seeing Greg Jamieson's bid to buy the Phoenix Coyotes completely fall apart.
Yeah. Reportedly because he needs more quote unquote money men.
Now, I mean, there was some speculation by our birdie that maybe Compton and the other dude,
Stranton Sklavos,
might have been trying to join Jamieson, but why would you do that?
Why would you do that? Unless you had some sort of insider information that it was going to move to Canada and you wanted to.
That seems like a loser investment, and I can imagine why no one wants to put money into it. Like, why would you want to do that? No one even goes to those games.
That's true.
And that team is, while they peaked last year in the Western Conference Finals, they're not headed back there again, you know?
No, I don't think so.
So, I don't know. I certainly wouldn't put any money in that team, dude.
Yeah, me either.
We got some emails, dude.
Yeah. Well, Dimitri had to jump on the bandwagon and he said, Marlowe, discuss.
Hey, hard to say anything bad about Patrick Marlowe right now. You can't. I mean, the guy's on fire.
Yeah.
He's playing great.
He's playing great. He had three excellent scoring chances in the most recent game. He easily could have scored. He was held off the scoreboard in the Ducks game, but certainly not for lack of chances and not for lack of trying, especially near the end of the game. He sort of just created a mini breakaway out of nothing.
Yeah.
I have no idea how he did that.
That overtime against the Ducks was wild.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a fun overtime, one of my favorites I think I've ever seen. I don't almost no stoppages in play.
And it almost made up for how boring the regulation was.
That was a back and forth slugfest at the end. I really enjoyed it. It was cool.
It was great. Let's see. So from Patrick, he says he was watching NHL Live this morning and Marty McSorley was on. And Marty McSorley said that the Sharks couldn't beat teams like the Hawks or the Kings in the series. And he also said that Brent Burns will require another sports hernia surgery and would most likely not play this year. And so he says, do you think McSorley has some inside knowledge on Burns or is just talking some smack? You know, I was talking about this with a friend of mine, and we both agreed he's talking smack because if, think about it like this, if Burns really did need another hernia surgery, then why is he skating?
Right.
Why would he be practicing? If they know that he's going to get shelved for the rest of the season, there's no reason to you know, risk another injury or making the injury worse.
This is taking inside information from a guy who mysteriously disappeared from Sharks broadcasts because right. rumored went El Pollo Loco or whatever. I mean, I don't know. How does McSorley have inside info on Brent Burns? I wouldn't imagine he's super plugged in to the Sharks organization anymore based on how he left kind of unceremoniously during the middle of the season. You know, so before that was when Drew Remender was gone. I don't know if some of the listeners remember, right? I mean, Drew was gone. McSorley took his place, and all of a sudden he was just gone. Like in the middle of the season, he was just gone. No comments, no nothing. So, dude, I got to say, it would not shock me if that was the case. But, you know, we've seen this in other sports with someone like Andrew Bogut, the Golden State Warriors. You know, the guy had knee surgery and or he had a problem with his leg. He tried to play a couple games, didn't work out. He sat out for 2 months, and now he's back. But, you know, they were waiting to see, did he need another surgery? So, I mean, is that possible? And I don't know if
I mean, anything's possible. I'm not a doctor, but anything's possible.
The fact that he's skating now is encouraging, but I don't feel good about this. I mean, you know, he's...
There's still no timetable,
there's still no timetable. Still, no one really knows. They're being super vague about it, but I don't know. And you know, in terms of McSorley kind of jumping on the Sharks, you know, saying they can't beat the Hawks and the Kings in his playoff series, I don't know how I could disagree with that. I mean, what have the Sharks shown lately that they could do that?
That's right. You can't, I mean, you can, it wouldn't be real smart to go for the last six games of the season, of this season, and ignore the last three seasons of hockey coming from the Sharks.
I don't think that you can give the Sharks a ton of credit yet because in 16 games or 20 games, if they're 17-3 or 16-4 and they're still kind of world beaters, and then I think the rest of the league is going to take them super seriously. But, you know, I want to see them beat St. Louis. I want to see them beat Chicago. I love how they're playing right now. But I think until they get a signature win like that.
I mean, hasn't Montreal won 5 in a row?
Yeah, but they lost and they got crushed last night by Ottawa.
Exactly, but like one game ago, everyone's like, you know, my friend in Ottawa who's a Habs fan is like, oh, Canadians are going to make the playoffs, they're going to be awesome. It's like,
honestly,
really?
I think it's different. The Sharks have legitimate, like, cup-contending talent where the Habs are a little bit of a flash.
I agree with that. I'm just saying that crazy things can happen over 5 or 6 games. That's all I'm saying.
Well, hopefully we'll still be talking about this great streak and, you know, winning ways next week after we come back, you know, probably after we play the Hawks.
After we play the Hawks, absolutely. Because I want to talk about that game specifically.
And see where we are. There's no reason to believe we won't still be in a great position.
No, I agree with that, dude. And it's great to be a Sharks fan right now. We're still happy. We're still giddy, but we're seeing some tough road ahead with some good teams, and I hope the Sharks are up for the challenge.
Bring it. We're ready.
Bring it.
Yeah.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.